Matthew chapter 6, we're going to continue our study on the Sermon on the Mount. Certainly appreciate you all being here. Jesus, in the last few verses, has discussed hypocrisy when it comes to giving, when it comes to praying, when it comes to fasting. I want to say something about fasting that we talked about last Sunday night. A couple of you had come up with me and asked me what was the fasting that we were talking about. The biblical fasting is abstaining from food or drink. It's not, I'm going to put my cell phone down for a week. That's not fasting. I'm going to give up Facebook for a week. That's not fasting. Fasting in a biblical sense is doing without the necessities, doing without food and water to really train yourself and to help yourself spiritually. But if you have any more questions, just let me know. But Jesus is now going into, and he's reaching a higher level of true devotion to God. He has been talking about things that Christians, that disciples should do. He's talking about things that should define the life of a disciple. And Jesus is really going to move into showing us what real discipleship looks like. So read with me. We're going to read it again just for the sake. I've got it in my notes, so I'm going to do it. Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 through 21. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So this is a topic we don't like. This is a topic that every single one of us, or almost every single one of us, are guilty of. A phrase I've heard all my life, and a phrase that you know, is that you cannot drag a U-Haul behind a hearse, right? You can't take anything with you. When you go, you go. And the rest of your stuff's going to stay here. And people are going to fight over it. No one can bring material wealth into eternity. Heaven and hell do not have banks. Heaven and hell do not have parking garages. You know, as a child, we desire things. Children, they desire things. I remember growing up, I had two He-Man. I took them everywhere. Where I went, my He-Man went with me. I know some of your children are the same way, and some of you are the same way. You know, you had the blankie, or you had that one stuffed animal that you couldn't leave home without. In fact, if you left home without it, guess what you're doing? You're turning around. Doesn't matter how far. You're turning around. You're going back, and you're getting that little teddy bear. If you leave it in a restaurant, or if you leave it at Walmart or wherever, guess what? You're going to go back, and you're going to find that. Because if you don't find that, when it comes sleepy time that night, you might have a few problems, right? So there are certain things as children we cling to. We develop these emotional, we develop these physical attachments to stuff really without even knowing it. Now, sadly, when we grow up as adults, a lot of that doesn't change much because we still have that physical, we still have that emotional attachment to things in our life. We think it's okay, we think it's better because we're more mature now, we have a mature attachment to those things. We're not like a child anymore. And so we start to justify. We may not cry at bedtimes if we don't have it, well, depending on what it is, but, you know, it's grandma's, it's grandpa's, I just can't leave it, I can't get rid of it. I cannot tell you the times that I've heard that. Even in my own family. That was so-and-so's, I just can't, we've had it for generations. When in reality, what that has become to you is a treasure. You call it what it is, Jesus is going to call it a treasure. It's taking on more meaning than what it has meant to be. Since 1800, America, the standard of living has increased 2,500%. There are around 50 to 60,000 storage facilities across America. In 2012, which was the last study done, there are over 2 billion square feet of storage space. And so when Jesus comes on the scene in Matthew chapter 6 and says, don't lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where all these things are going to be destroyed, all these things are going to be worthless eventually, to the 21st century Americans, guess what? It sounds pretty precise. Sounds pretty precise. And a lot of times we say, well, Ryan, that's not what he's talking about. Yeah, he is. Yeah, he is. You know, a lot of people have done it's kind of a new thing, I think, the minimalist lifestyle. It's a popular thing to do now. It's beginning to be more popular. I've I've noticed my brother is starting to do this. There's a documentary on Netflix if you want to watch that. I plan on watching it this week. But basically the idea is living with as little as possible. Not spending your money, not wasting money on just hoarding up junk. Because we're good at it. We're very good at it. We fill one barn up, guess what? We want to build a bigger one because we got to have more room to put stuff. My dad is so guilty of that. I'm going to call him out. Hopefully he won't listen to this online. Because he may not let me use any of his stuff anymore. See, I don't have to. I can just use his. No. So we say, why, Jesus? Why can't I have stuff? Why can't I just hoard up stuff? Why can't I just collect all of this stuff? Why are you saying this? Why here? Why in the middle of the Sermon on the Mount? Why in the middle of discipleship? You see, Jesus is trying to protect us. Jesus is trying to protect our hearts. He's trying to protect his followers. Jesus said, you know, you're not on earth. We talked about it this morning. You're not on earth for a very long time. Your days are numbered. Every single one of us, we have a number attached to us. And that is the number of days that we have left on this earth. And we have one of the greatest, one of the most important tasks, and that is protecting our heart. Proverbs chapter 4 and verse 23. Watch over your heart with all diligence, for from it flow the springs of life. Everything that we think, everything that we say, everything that we do comes from where? Heart. Everything. So we have to protect what goes into our hearts, and we protect what comes out of our hearts. And so we have something so valuable to protect. And yet so many times we want to justify it. So many times we want to justify it. In October 1947, there was a geologist by the name of Dr. John Williamson who was doing some work in the country of Tanzania. One day he found himself driving in a very deserted area by himself, slipping and sliding on this rain-soaked road, and suddenly his four-wheel drive vehicle slid off the path and it sank up to the axles. And he wasn't going anywhere. So he got out and decided to take his shovel, and he began the unpleasant task of digging himself out of this hole. And he's been digging for quite some time. He's starting to get tired. He's starting to wear down, and all of a sudden his shovel hits something. Curiosity gets him. And so he starts to dig a little more, and what he saw was a pink-like stone of some sort. Now remember, he's a geologist, and naturally he's curious about rock formations, and so he picked it up and began to wipe all of this mud away. And the more mud he removed, the more excited he became. And really, when he got down to the end, he couldn't believe what he'd found. It was a diamond. It was a diamond hidden there in the mud. Now, any diamond at all would be a surprise in that situation, but what Dr. Williamson found would become known as the famous pink diamond of Tanzania, worth millions upon millions of dollars. And today, that stone sits in the scepter of Great Britain. And Dr. Williamson is famous around the world for his find, an accidental find, of something so precious, worth millions of dollars. But do you know the beauty of that diamond? The worth of that diamond does not even begin to compare to the beauty and to the worth of our soul, of our hearts. Did you know that? Did you know that God thinks that you're more beautiful than anything in the world? That your heart is more important than anything in the world? Mark chapter 8 in verse 36. What will it profit a man if he gains the whole world? What is it going to profit a man if he gains the entire world and loses his soul? I like what the ERV says. It is worth nothing for you to have the whole world if you yourself are lost. And they're right. Jesus is right. The problem is, do we believe that? Do we believe that to God there is no amount to compare to your soul? That there is no treasure on earth, there is no amount of money on earth that is worth more, that is more beautiful than your soul. And so Jesus here in the middle of the Sermon on the Mount, being taught here, he says, be careful what your heart treasures because of its importance. Be careful what your soul treasures because of its importance. And more specifically, Jesus here is talking about physical things because he knows we as human beings, we like to collect and we like to have physical things. But he says those things will be destroyed. He says, he talks about clothing. The moth are going to destroy them. The rust is going to destroy all the metals. The thieves are going to break in. You remember their houses? We talked about their houses are made out of mud. And so it wasn't very uncommon for someone to break in someone's house just by simply digging a hole through the wall, reaching in and grabbing what they could. Jesus said people are going to do that. And in this day, when Jesus is talking to the disciples here, talking to these people, the gems and gold and silver and wine and land and oils and all the things that we like to collect, all the things that we like, it was the same thing. And Jesus says, whatever makes you comfortable in life, that's what you're going to hold dear to. Well, why shouldn't we waste our time with these things, Jesus? Why can't I waste my time with those things? They're going to be gone. I love what Marshall Keeble, I've said it many times, love what Marshall Keeble said. When he talked about earthly things, he said it on several occasions. It's all going to be burned up. It's all going to be burned up one day. And I think really that's the point Jesus is trying to say. It's going to be gone. So why are you wasting your time loving this stuff, putting this stuff before God? And he says in Matthew 6, in verse 21, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The New Living Translation says it this way, wherever your treasure is, there the desires of your heart will also be. Why, Jesus? What does treasure have to do with my heart? Because where your heart is, that's where the source of happiness is. And for a lot of Christians, the happiness is really in the wrong place. For a lot of Christians, the happiness is in the career, it's in hobbies, it's in sports, it's in money, it's in relationships, it's in families. And you know the similarity that all those have together? They're all temporary. Every one of them are temporary. So the question is, the question I have for you, if you're taking notes, you can write this one down. What eternal things are you seeking with your heart? What eternal things are you seeking with your heart? If true happiness is God, then heavenly things will be what you seek. And that's where the real happiness is. And let me say this. I don't think Jesus is condemning treasures. I don't think that... He's talking about the way that we treat our treasures, and I want us to understand that. I mean, a lot of us have a lot of things, and I don't think Jesus is condemning the having things. Jesus is condemning allowing those things to take over the love in our life. The idea is that a lot of people, and we're guilty of it, so don't sit here and think that we're innocent and we've never been guilty of this, but we take our things and we kind of push God over on his throne and we like to set our things up there with him and we like to hold them as just as important. You know, what would we do if we lost everything? That type of mentality. Jesus is condemning that love. No one is going to remove God from his throne. Jesus doesn't stop here. He goes on in Matthew 6, verses 22 through 24. Andrew, I think I've got that next one. There you go. You're learning. The eye is the lamp of the body. So then, if your eye is clear, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light that is in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? So our eyes are the only means to see light. They are our only source of vision. If our eyes are clear, then everything will be put in its proper place. If our eyes are clear, our vision will be clear. We'll see what's really happening. However, if our eyes are bad, if our eyes are distorted, then there's no way for light to enter the body. Therefore, guess what? It's full of darkness. Darkness takes over. Talked about this idea this morning in my Bible class in relation to sin. If our eyes are distorted, if our eyes are cloudy, our spiritual eye that is, then really we can't see sin for what it is. We justify sin, we rationalize sin. But if our spiritual eyes are clear, if there's nothing blocking the way, then we see sin for what it is. It's sin. We don't change the name to soften it. We don't justify it. We don't rationalize it. We call it what it is. And we deal with it the way that God teaches us to deal with it. So if your eyes look dingy, then you see everything as dingy. If your eyes are distorted, you see the world looks distorted. What's distorting our view? Conceit? Jealousy? Prejudice? Jesus says if your eye is bad, what's interesting, the word that's used for bad here is a word that means stingy, grudging. So a stingy heart is not a good heart. A stingy eye is not a good eye. Jesus wants us to be generous with what we have, right? He wants us to be generous with our actions, our good actions, right? He wants to be generous with our good attitude, right? And he closes out with a very familiar verse, a verse that our last leaders did last year, Matthew chapter 6 and verse 24. No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he'll be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth. We have heard that verse a lot of times. You can't follow two things successfully. You cannot do it. You can't like the Bulldogs and the Volunteers. Just kidding. You can't like Florida and Alabama. No, really, you just can't. I'm just kidding. Kidding, Kevin. Calm down. Now, what's interesting, you know, I tried to truly expose this verse because I'm like you. I've read this verse 100 times. I've heard this verse growing up. I've quoted it in Bible classes. And, you know, I tried to expose it and open it up and see if I could find something there I've never seen before. And I did. In the city of Babylon in Revelation chapter 18 was believed to be serving the spirit of Mammon. Some scholars believe that a Syrian or a Chaldean god was named Mammon. He was like the god of wealth, Plutus. And so Jesus is maybe hinting at that here. And it kind of makes sense. Because people serve wealth like a god. Wealth is like a god in some respects. It has a draw to it. Money has a draw to it. Am I right? I mean, money has a draw to it. Let's be honest. We love to make money. And we love to work overtime to make that money. We love to sell stuff and do certain things to make extra money. It has a certain draw to it. And again, that's why I believe that Jesus is really stressing that point here in Matthew chapter 6. This is why money is discussed in other parts of Scripture. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 6 through 10. But godliness actually is a means of great gain when accompanied by contentment. For we brought nothing into the world, and we cannot take anything out of it either. If we had food and covering with these, we shall be content. Don't you wish we were just content with that? But those who want to get rich fall into a temptation and a snare and many foolish and harmful desires, which plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is the root of all sorts of evil, and some by longing for it have wandered away from faith, from the faith, and pierced themselves with many, many griefs. Ecclesiastes chapter 5 and verse 10, he who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves abundance with its income. This too is vanity. Let me give you one more. Luke chapter 16 verses 14 and 15. Now the Pharisees, who were lovers of money, were listening to all these things and were scoffing at him. And he said to them, you are those who justify yourselves in the sight of men, but God knows your heart, for that which is highly esteemed among men is detestable in the sight of God. They were trying to justify their money. They're trying to justify their love for money. Again, money is an evil. It's mammon is what is an evil. It's the love of that. It's going above and beyond. It's loving that more than anything else. It's saying, you know what? I really don't need to worship on Sunday. He said, I'm going to work every single Sunday. And you go months and months and months, and yet you never attend a worship service. That's not good. But when you try and remove God from his throne and replace it with money, when you desire money and making money more than serving God, friends, it becomes a problem. It becomes a heart problem. Get your Bibles and turn them to Luke chapter 12. That's all the slides, Andrew. Thank you. I want to read a parable, Luke chapter 12, verses 16 through 21. He told them a parable saying, the land of a certain rich man was very productive. He began reasoning to himself, saying, what shall I do since I have no place to store my crops? And he said, this is what I will do. I'm going to tear down my barns and I'm going to build larger ones. And there I will store all my grain and my goods, and I will say to my soul, so you have many goods laid up for many years to come. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, you fool, this very night your soul is required of you, and now who will own what you have prepared? So is the man who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God. This man forgot all about that soon, what I tried to help remind us of this morning, we are going to face eternity. And this man prepared for life well on earth. He wanted to build bigger barns. I'm going to have enough to build bigger things. And so I need to do that. I need to make sure that I'm taken care of here on earth. But in doing that, he neglected the plan for his eternal home. I read this from a minister. He said, we all have a superabundance. What do I do with the surplus? We call things necessity, which people in the rest of the world would call luxuries. And they're right. The things that we believe are necessities across the world are luxuries. You know, we plan on earth well. We set up retirements. We save for retirements. We set up trust funds. We set up savings accounts. And those things are good. It's good to be prepared here on earth. But I think a lot of times we put more faith into that and we put more work into that than we do securing our heavenly home. Where is your heart tonight? Where is your heart tonight? Who do you serve? You know, Jesus has spent a lot of time talking and discussing the nature of true righteousness. It begins in Matthew chapter 5, and he talks about the Beatitudes. He talks about being poor in spirit and those others that are there. And he moves on, and he comes in here, and he talks about really our hearts. And he talks about what should define our life as a disciple. And he says it's not what you own that defines your life. Where do you spend your money? You know, I encourage you, go home and you know, pull up the bank online or look at your bank statements and, you know, where does all my money go? Where do I spend it? You know, where do I spend all my time? Think about the days or the hours that you have in a day and what you spend those hours doing. What is it mostly on? I'd say a lot of it's on ourselves. Where do you spend all of your energy? And if you look at those lists, and you can talk about some other things in life, but if you look at those lists, that's what's going to show you what you love the most. I promise you. Where you spend your time, your money, and your energy is what you love the most. And if it isn't God, friends, we need to repent. And just like the church in Revelation, we need to go back to our first love. We need to remember that. We need to remember whose we are, whose we belong to. We need to remember our real purpose. You know, I think the real message on the Sermon on the Mount is the heart. And in a lot of ways, we come into this building, we come into our circle of Christian friends, our church family, and we put on a lot of masks, we put on a lot of faces, so the people, the family, the friends can perceive us as godly, when in reality, deep down, our hearts are absolutely being eaten alive with struggle. They're being eaten alive with fear. They're being eaten alive with temptations and the desires of this world. And we do that because we desire the praise of men rather than the praise of God. One of the goals I wanted to accomplish tonight was to really understand the context of Matthew 6, 19 through 24, and what Jesus is saying here. And I want us to help understand the importance of what Jesus is demanding here. Jesus demands our hearts. Jesus will not share our hearts with anything or anyone. He wants it. And I pray tonight that we are 100% devoted to God. But I know we're human. I know we fall short. Romans chapter 3 and verse 23. I know we come short a lot of time from what God calls us to be. And so if we can help you in any way tonight, won't you come as together we stand and sing.